I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to have the privilege and opportunity of coming to Canton, Ohio, and the privilege of being a part of this citywide freedom rally. And in the very beginning, I want to express my appreciation to Reverend Lancaster and all of the clergymen, religious leaders, and leaders in the community who worked so untiringly to make this meeting possible. I am indeed indebted to the city officials of Canton for all of the courtesies extended to us, and I can assure you that we will remain grateful to you for these courtesies on our brief visit as long as the court of memory shall limit. Now, I want to speak to you briefly tonight, and when I say speaking briefly, I can assure you that a brief speech from a Baptist preacher is a magnificent accomplishment. But it so happens that we have to get a plane shortly, and necessity has me, so I'll have to be rather brief. But I would like to say just a few words tonight about facing the challenge of a new age. There can be no doubt about the fact that the wind of change is blowing all over our world. It is sweeping away an old order, and it is ushering in a new order. Now, we are all familiar with that old order that is passing away because we have seen it in all of its dimensions. We've seen it in other nations in the form of colonialism, and we know that colonialism is now passing away. We've seen the old order in our own nation in the form of slavery and racial segregation. For 244 years, the Negro had to walk through the long and desolate night of slavery. And then after that, almost 100 years of racial segregation. But we know that these systems are passing away. And in a real sense, a new order is coming into being in our country. To put it figuratively, in biblical language, we've broken loose from the Egypt of slavery. And we have moved through the wilderness of legal segregation, and now we stand on the border of the promised land of integration. And I submit to you tonight that I'm absolutely convinced that the system of segregation is on its deathbed today. And the only thing I'm certain about it is how costly the segregationist will make the funeral. The old order is passing away, and the new order is coming into being. Now, whenever anything new comes into history, it brings with it new challenges and new responsibilities. And I'd like to mention some of the challenges that we all face, white and black alike, as a result of this emerging new age. Now, I would like to start on the world scene by saying we are challenged today more than ever before to develop a world perspective. You see, the world in which we live is geographically one, and now we are challenged to make it one in terms of brotherhood. Now, it is true that the geographical oneness of this age has come into being to a large extent through man's scientific ingenuity. Man, through his scientific genius, has been able to dwarf distance and place time in change. Yes, we've been able to carve highways through the stratosphere. And our jet planes have compressed into minute distances that once took months and weeks and days. I think Bob Hope has adequately described this new jet age in which we live. He said it is an age in which it is possible to take a non-stop flight from Los Angeles, California to New York City, a distance of some 3,000 miles. And if on taking off in Los Angeles you develop hiccups, you will hick in Los Angeles and cup in New York City. You know, it is possible because of the time difference to take a flight from Tokyo, Japan on Sunday morning and arrive in Seattle, Washington on the preceding Saturday night. And when your friends meet you at the airport and ask when you left Tokyo, you would have to say, "I left tomorrow." This is the kind of world in which we live. Now, this is a bit humorous, but I'm trying to laugh a basic fact into all of us. Through our scientific genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood. And now, through our moral and ethical commitment, we must make of it a brotherhood. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. This is what we must do. No nation can live alone. No individual can live alone. Individuals and nations are tied together. Some short time ago, Mrs. King and I journeyed to that great country known as India. I never will forget the experience. It was a magnificent experience to meet and talk with the great leaders of India, meet and talk with hundreds and thousands of people in the cities and the villages all over that vast country. These moments will remain dear to me and in my memory for many, many years to come. But I say to you, my friends, as we journeyed over that country, there were those depressing moments. For how can one avoid being depressed when he sees evidences with his own eyes of millions of people going to bed hungry at night? How can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes thousands and thousands of people sleeping on the sidewalks at night? They have no houses to go in. They have no beds to sleep in. How can one avoid being depressed when he discovers that out of India's population of more than 400 million people, some 380 million make an annual income of less than $90 a year? Most of these people have never seen a doctor or dentist. As I stood there noticing these conditions, something within me cried out, "Can we in America stand idly by and not be concerned?" An answer came, "Oh no, because the destiny of the United States is tied up with the destiny of India." And I started thinking about the fact that in our country, millions of dollars a day to store surplus food. And I said to myself, "I know where we can store that food free of charge. In the wrinkled stomachs of the millions of God's children in Asia, Africa, South America, and in our own nation who go to bed hungry at night." Behavior can be regulated. It may be true that the law cannot change the heart, but it can restrain the heartless. It may be true that the law can't make a man love me, but it can restrain him from lynching me, and I think that's pretty important also. So while the law may not be able to change the hearts of men, it can change the habits of men. And after you change the habits of men, pretty soon the attitudes will be changed, the hearts will be changed, and we will see a new society and a new day. Therefore, I say that is the need for strong civil rights legislation now in every state and all over this country. It is imperative. It is urgent. It is a necessity. It is a necessity on the local scale. In every state, there should be fair housing laws. There should be laws guaranteeing the right to get a job without facing discriminatory conditions that Negroes face all over this country. There should be legislation and action to get rid of de facto segregation in the public schools, as we find all over the country. And then there is need to pass the civil rights bill that is now before the Senate of our nation. As you know, that bill got through the House unscathed. We saw in the House of Representatives a magnificent expression and demonstration of what can be done through bipartisan cooperation. Now that bill goes to the Senate. And the rules are different in the Senate. It will not have the same ease of sailing in the Senate that it had in the House. Because in the Senate you have 19 men who happen to live in my section of the country who like to talk. And they will talk a long, long time to keep civil rights from becoming a reality. And so they're going to filibuster to try to water that bill down and make it so weak, so emasculate that bill that it will have no meaning. I think it is urgent for people of goodwill all over this country to rise up and make it clear through their witness, through their voices, through their letters to their senators and congressmen, saying that this bill must be passed. Some months ago, on a beautiful day in June, a young, vigorous, intelligent, sincere president stood before this nation and said in eloquent terms, the problem that we face in civil rights is not merely a political problem. It is at bottom a moral problem. And he went on to say it is as old as the scriptures and as modern as the Constitution. It is a question of whether we will treat our Negro brothers as we would like to be treated. And on the heels of that great speech, he presented to Congress the most comprehensive civil rights package ever presented by any president of this nation. Since that day in June, our nation has known a dark day and a dreary night. This young man was cut down by an assassin's bullet on Elm Street in Dallas, Texas. I think the greatest tribute that America can pay to the late John Fitzgerald Kennedy is to see that this civil rights bill is passed without any further watering down. As we go on in the days ahead, working through all of these methods, I do believe that we can speed up the day. The brotherhood of man will be a reality right in this nation. May I say to you that in our struggle in the South and all over the nation, we are going to do our part. We feel that it is necessary to move on. This is the meaning of the revolution taking place in the South and all over the nation. We are making it clear that we can no longer accept segregation in any of its dimensions. And we will continue to stand up for that which is just and for that which is right. And we will continue to preach the doctrine of nonviolence. And I submit to you that I am more convinced than ever before that the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom is the method of nonviolent resistance. And I will continue to preach this. I'm convinced that if we succumb to the temptation of using violence in our struggle, unborn generations will be the recipients of a dark and desolate night of bitterness. And our chief legacy to the future will be an endless reign of meaningless chaos. That is another way, a way as old as the insights of Jesus of Nazareth, and as modern as the techniques of Mohandas K. Gandhi. It is possible to stand up with determination, with courage, with zeal against an unjust system, and yet not stoop to hatred and violence in the process. And this is what we preach. This is what we teach. And by following this method, we will not go out to rise from a position of disadvantage to one of advantage, thereby subverting justice. We will not substitute one tyranny for another. This is why I must disagree with any doctrine of black supremacy, because the doctrine of black supremacy is as dangerous as the doctrine of white supremacy. God is not interested. God is not interested merely in the freedom of black men and brown men and yellow men, but God is interested in the freedom of the whole human race and the creation of a society where all men will live together as brothers, and every man will respect the dignity and the worth of human personality. And so this is our challenge. This is our opportunity to go out to make our nation a greater nation. This is an opportunity to make the brotherhood of man a reality. And may I say, as I move to my conclusion, that this is not just a sectional problem. This is a national problem, and no area of our country can boast of clean hands in the realm of brotherhood. And so we must work all over America to get rid of segregation and to get rid of discrimination. This is the only way that we can make the brotherhood of man a reality. May I say to you, my friends, I still have faith in the future. The days ahead may be difficult. There may be dark hours and frustrating moments. But I still have the faith to believe that this problem can be solved. We sing a song. You heard it early in the evening. It is the theme song of our struggle. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Before the victor's won, some may get scarred up a bit, but we shall overcome. Before the victor's won, some more will be thrown in jail, but we shall overcome. Before the victory for brotherhood is won, some more like a courageous Medgevers may face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children and their white brothers from a permanent death of the spirit, then nothing can be more redemptive. Yes, we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth would rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. We, because the Bible is right, you shall reap what you sow. With this faith. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mounting of despair the stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. And we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join